In other news.
To determine why and how the towers collapsed.
Kind of scary to have this helicopter hovering around.
You walk up to them and confront them. They can't stand that.
Welcome to Another News. I'm Jeff Brady. In the last two decades, the telecom industry maintained a $1 trillion propaganda campaign arguing there can't be a mechanism of action from non-thermal electromagnetic fields such as cell phone radiation emission to produce biological effects. The propaganda argues that type of radiation is too weak. But that's not true, according to 40 years of research. Our guest, Professor Martin Paul, contributed to that research showing how non-thermal EMFs actually do have harmful biological effects. In addition to the plans by telecom companies to install millions of 5G antenna without biological safety testing on electric utility poles, in public buildings, schools or bus stop shelters, in public parks, national parks, and on federally owned land, the FCC gave approval to SpaceX to launch 4,425 satellites into low Earth orbit. The total number of 5G satellites to be put in orbit will be 20,000. We talk about human health impacts. Fifth-generation wireless microwaves will inflict that include cumulative, neurological, cognitive, and reproductive effects with Professor Martin Paul, Professor Emeritus of Biochemistry and Basic Medical Sciences at Washington State University. He recently issued a 90-page report titled 5G, Great Risk for EU, U.S., and International Health, compelling evidence for 8 distinct types of great harm caused by electromagnetic field exposures and the mechanism that causes them. Dr. Paul, welcome to Another News.
Thank you.
Would you please give listeners some of your background that led you to the research in this 90-page report?
Okay, yeah, sure, I'd be happy to. Let me just say, I got my bachelor's degree at Johns Hopkins University in physics, and I got my PhD in biochemistry and genetics from Caltech. And so we've got two of the top institutions in the world. And this background, of having a background both in physics and in the life sciences, has been very important in terms of these EMFs, because you have to understand both in order to put things together. And fortunately, I have a background that's allowed me to do that. Before I got involved in electromagnetic field things, EMFs, I was working on environmental medicine issues having to do with chemicals and chemical effects causing disease. And it turns out that actually the effects of many of these chemicals and the effects of the EMFs are actually quite similar, but they work along different pathways to produce those effects. And so a lot of the information that I had from earlier studies has been very, very relevant to these studies on the EMFs. What happened was that I found in the literature a number of studies that showed that you could block the effects of electromagnetic fields, EMFs, by using what are known as calcium channel blockers. These are drugs that are specific for blocking what are called voltage-gated calcium channels. And what that showed clearly was that the EMFs are working by activating these VGCCs and producing effects in that way. That's been a huge, huge change, because previously we knew there were non-thermal effects, effects that were not due to heating, but we had no idea how they were produced. There were a number of theories about them, but there was no documentation that they were right. And so here we have an important mechanism. You know, in the cells of our bodies, we keep the calcium levels very low inside the cells under normal circumstances. So the calcium levels are normally about 1/10,000th in the cell of what they are outside the cell. When you open these channels and allow lots of calcium to flow in, it causes all kinds of havoc. You know, that happens in the normal physiology, but only for very brief time periods. What happens with EMFs is you get extensive, you know, increases, and they produce all kinds of different effects. So that's a general idea of what's going on.
These are voltage-gated calcium channels in specific cells in the body. Is that correct?
They occur, in, as far as I can tell, in all the cells of the body. I haven't found any examples where cells don't have any of them. But the levels and the types, there are 10 different VGCCs that we have in our bodies. And so which ones occur in which cells varies, and how many of them, and how they're regulated varies. So the effects at the cellular levels are not all the same, but all the cells will respond.
I understand. I definitely want to get a little deeper into that. But before we do, would you go over the 8 pathophysiological effects caused by non-thermal microwave frequency that you identify in this report?
Yeah. First of all, the 8 things are not the only things that are going on. They're simply the things that have been most extensively documented. What I showed was that there were from 12 or 13 up to 34 to 36 different reviews that have been published on each of these, showing that they occur over and over and over again in the literature. The point I'm trying to make here is that we know these things are occurring, and there's extraordinarily extensive evidence on that. The tragedy is that the regulatory agencies and the industry completely failed to recognize any of these things. So we're in very deep trouble. Okay, so what are those? One of them is that there are large numbers of neurological and neuropsychiatric effects, and these are thought to be produced by the direct effects of the EMFs on the nervous system, including the brain. And when you study these effects in animals, you find absolutely dramatic changes in the structure and function of the brain. And the same thing seems to be going on in humans in producing these effects. There were also reproductive effects of various sorts. So we have changes, we have a lowered sperm count, we got changes in the structure of the testis, we have lowered sperm quality, lowered sperm motility, and we also have impacts on the ovaries. That's been studied in animals, so it's not really hasn't been studied in humans, because you really can't do it in humans. But there is evidence that in humans it does impact female fertility as well. So you have a lower number of eggs. You have you also have increased spontaneous abortion. You have decreased levels of each of the 3 types of sex hormones, estrogen, progesterone, and testosterone. And you have lower libido. All those things are going on. So, again, we know that. Industry denies it. You also have DNA effects, where the cellular DNA is attacked as a consequence of the EMF exposures. There are 3 different types of DNA effects. There are single-stranded breaks in the cellular DNA. There are double-stranded breaks in the cellular DNA. And there are also oxidized bases in the cellular DNA. And all of these have important roles in producing mutations at the cellular level that can cause cancer, and mutations at the organismal level, that is, you know, when you produce babies, that can produce the most important types of mutations that occur in human genetics. So we're in deep trouble. Now, that's just 3 of the things, okay? There's also oxidative stress, which occurs and which has causal roles in causing almost every single chronic disease that you can name. We have lower endocrine function, that is hormone function, or changes in hormone function, I should say. Sometimes they get increased, sometimes they get decreased, depending on the hormone and depending on the conditions. So there are lots of effects on the hormones. There are increases in what's called apoptosis, which is programmed cell death, which has an important role both in producing the reproductive effects we talked about before, and also in producing neurodegenerative diseases, such as Alzheimer's and ALS. So we have concerns about those as well. And let me just say, we have now people coming down with Alzheimer's disease at age 30, something that is completely unheard of at previous times. And in general, the age of onset of Alzheimer's has been dropping quite dramatically. And we have animal studies that argue that Alzheimer's-like effects can be produced in animals from EMF exposures. There are other kinds of evidence which argues for that as well. Well, we have increases in intracellular calcium, which is the cause of all this other stuff, and that's been shown to occur. And you get changes in calcium signaling, you get increases in oxidative stress, you get a lot of other things, a lot of inflammatory effects that go on as a consequence of the calcium changes. And then you have cancer causation. I had 35 reviews on cancer causation that showed that with the some of the earliest ones going back many decades. And we're still arguing about this stuff, even though there's extraordinary evidence on cancer causation. It's ridiculous. So anyway, okay, so those are the eight, and I think I've covered them all. I hope I have.
You did cover them. So we have the attack on the nervous system, the attack on the endocrine system, the production of oxidative stress, the attack on DNA, elevated levels of apoptosis, the lower male and female fertility rates, and then production of excessive intracellular calcium, and then the attack of the cells of our bodies to cause cancer. Dr. Paul, there's a cumulative and irreversible nature from non-thermal, non-heated EMF exposure that many people aren't aware of. Would you please talk about that in connection to human health effects?
We don't know that everything is cumulative and irreversible, but where we do have strong evidence that that's true is with the neurological and neuropsychiatric effects, with at least some of the reproductive effects. The DNA effects are inherently, that is the mutational effects, are inherently cumulative and irreversible. But then there are several others, such as the Alzheimer's and other neurodegenerative diseases, we think are cumulative and irreversible. There are also effects with regard to, which we haven't talked about, that have to do with the causation of ADHD and autism. ADHD and autism appear to be caused by EMF exposures during the perinatal period, that is, before and shortly after birth. That's a period in which there's very rapid development of the brain and, in fact, the whole nervous system. What we think is going on is that during that time, there are very, very large numbers of synapses that are being made. So each neuron in the brain has about 1,000 synaptic connections. So lots and lots of synaptic connections where one neuron interacts with another, binds to another, and can either activate it or be activated by it. You know, these are huge, huge interactions, and they have to. So the synaptic connections are very important for the function of the brain, and we know those synaptic connections are regulated by five different mechanisms. And every single one of those mechanisms are calcium regulated. So they're all regulated by the calcium levels in the cells, such that if those levels are too high, the whole system gets screwed up. So that's how we think that autism is produced and how it can be produced by EMF exposures. And I do believe, in addition, that chemicals can have roles in causing autism, and they also work via excessive calcium in the cell. So it's not just the case that it's all EMFs or it's all chemicals. I believe that the EMFs are the main driver of the autism epidemic.
I just want to follow up on that statement.
Okay.
What makes you think that EMF, electromagnetic fields, non-thermal, maybe from cell emissions, cell towers, are the primary driver for autism?
You have to look at a variety of different types of evidence, okay? And one of the things we know is that excessive activity of the VGCCs can cause autism. We know that because there are rare mutations. One of the ones that has been studied a lot is something called Timothy syndrome, where you get a mutation in one of the VGCC genes, and you get excessive activity of that, and it then produces autism. And it also produces something else that we haven't talked about, and that is cardiac effects, which are life-threatening. In fact, these children, these babies that are born with Timothy syndrome don't live very long basically because the cardiac effects kill them. You know, so we have both. You know, you get autism, and you get these cardiac effects.
Do you suspect this is a pregnant mother being exposed to continual EMF fields?
Well, it doesn't have to be continual, but yeah, and the evidence is that exposures both before birth and after birth can have roles in this process, and you do have very rapid synaptic connections being made, formation of synaptic connections during those time periods. So it's very plausible that that's what's going on. Again, it doesn't mean that nothing else is causal. But the other thing which is true is that we have, you know, the timing of the autism epidemic is basically over the last 40 to 45 years. This is the same time period that we've had this incredible increase in EMFs. And now, in contrast to that, some of the chemicals that may have roles had increases, large increases, before that time. So that's one of the things that leads me to think that the EMFs are the primary driver. And, you know, there are counterarguments, and I'm not saying there are not, you know, but I'm very concerned about the EMFs. And you know, and part of the problem here is that we simply haven't had the kind of study of EMF effects that we need to have had. So, for example, there have been 17 studies on health impacts of people living near cell phone towers, all of them showing that there are effects, including 7 of the 8 effects we talked about before. Nobody's looked at autism. Nobody's looked at ADHD. There are large areas of ignorance here, which don't mean it's not happening. It just means we're not looking. And so we don't know whether it's happening for sure. But there have been a couple of epidemiological studies that have been done that suggest that the EMFs are very important in autism. There's also some clinical work that's been done that suggests that as well. Again, these are suggestions. These are not proof, and I want to emphasize that. I'm not saying that one can absolutely conclude this. What I am saying is that there are some red flags out there, and I think they're very worrisome.
I thank you for elaborating on this. To go back to the original question, to summarize, cumulative and irreversible effects occur with the neurological effects, the reproductive effects, and cardiac effects, and DNA.
DNA effects, and probably also ADHD and autism. Yeah, and that's, you know, based on what evidence we have. And if you want, I can talk to you further about the reproductive effects and the neurological neuropsychiatric effects. So those are my two biggest concerns here. You know, we've got cancer going on. We've got all this other stuff going on, but those are in my list. Those are 1 and 2 on my list. You know, they're huge things that I'm terribly concerned about.
I might ask you, why are you very concerned about those two?
I'm very concerned about them basically because I believe that they are already highly advanced in all the technologically advanced societies on Earth, and because the cumulative and irreversible nature means that they can easily lead to our extinction, simply based on the kinds of exposures we already have and the cumulative effects of the kinds of exposures we already have. So let's talk about the neurological and neuropsychiatric effects. Did we do that?
Sure.
Okay. What's been shown is that we have a whole series of effects which are already terribly, terribly common in our societies. And they include, and let me just read them to you here, sleep disturbance and insomnia, fatigue, tiredness, headache, depression or depressive symptoms, lack of concentration, attention, cognitive dysfunction, dizziness and vertigo, memory changes, restlessness, tension, anxiety, stress, agitation, and irritability. Okay. Now, That list comes from one of my reviews on this, but very similar reviews have been published. At least 9 reviews have published very similar kinds of lists of effects. First of them was actually published, I believe, back in 1967. You know, these are observations that have been made over and over and over again, and they are in response to various kinds of EMFs, not just one kind or two kinds. You know, they all do pretty much the same thing. And yet what we've done is to increase exposures over and over and over again all the time with absolutely no concern for the fact that we know these are produced by these EMFs. When you look at the studies in animals, and here you're talking about actually the structure of the brain, what's going on with the structure of the brain, structure of the individual neurons in the brain, you find that they start out slowly and you get modest effects. And if you then stop exposures, they pretty much go back to normal. But if you keep the same exposure coming, things get more and more severe and they become irreversible. So now you stop exposure and there's almost no change. Some of those animal studies have absolutely stunning effects on the structure of the brains to the point where, you know, the whole structure of the brain, it doesn't look at all like an animal brain. I mean, it looks like, you know, a piece of crap. You know, so these effects can be absolutely severe. In humans, the best information that we have is based on studies of occupational exposures that were done way back in the 1970s. Before we had much exposure other than occupational exposures. And you get a similar sort of pattern. And so you can estimate how fast things are going and how, based on the occupational exposure studies, you know, and I've been predicting that, and this is a rough estimate. You can also make an estimate based on how fast things go in animals, because typically things in humans take something like 15 times longer than they do in rodents. So you can make estimates on that. And based on those kinds of things, I come up with figures that within 5 to 7 years, we'll have an absolute crash in our brain function, which will produce absolute chaos, because everything in our society is based on our collective brain function.
Are you saying 5 to 7 years from now?
That's my estimate, yeah. And that's a rough estimate. I must emphasize that. It mm-hmm. could be shorter. It could be longer.
Because I would say for a number of years already it's been occurring.
One of the questions, and it's a serious question, is has our collective brain function already deteriorated to the point where we're simply unable to do anything about this that's effective? And if that's true, then of course we're doomed.
Yes, Dr. Paul, you stated in the report, quote, "I expect that the deterioration in brain function that we mm-hmm. are already seeing will seal our fate if we fail to act rapidly and vigorously. Our collective brain function may become completely incapable of dealing with such a mega crisis situation." So with this statement, it's logical to conclude that unless something is done to stop the 5G deployment, we will witness faster paced deterioration in human brain function within a shorter period of time.
Yes, and I think it'll be much shorter. And that's exactly right. I think we have to stop 5G. Yeah, I mean, in everything, I mean, this we're an extraordinary situation here. And now this just has to do now with our brain function. And obviously, you know, this is a big issue. And maybe what we should do is talk about the human fertility issue.
Sure.
Because that's another big issue that can easily lead to our rapid extinction. It may well be the case that the impact on human fertility is already further along than the impact on our brain function. Okay, so what do we know about this? As I said before, we know that there are all these effects on male fertility, female fertility, increased spontaneous abortion, lowered levels of the three sex hormones, and lowered libido. You know, and there are changes in the structure of the testes and in the structure of the ovaries that have been documented in animals. And they those are probably the main effects which tend to develop in a cumulative and eventually irreversible fashion. Okay. Now, what do we know about what's going on in human populations? We know that sperm counts in every single technologically advanced country on Earth have dropped to below 50% of normal. So there's already been a big impact there. We know that reproduction in that same set of countries has dropped to well below replacement levels in every single country with one single exception. So we're, and roughly speaking, you know, the average reproduction is something like 73% of replacement level. So that means that we're looking at declines in babies. Particularly if this gets worse and worse, be more and more severe, you know, we'll see huge declines in birth rates and eventually in population. Okay, so that's the general pattern. Now, there was a study that was published over 20 years ago by Magras and Zinos, a couple of Greek researchers, in which they were studying reproduction in mice. And what they showed was that they took young pairs of mice and they put them in cages, little cages on the ground in an antenna park. So we have a series of broadcasting antennas that were out putting out EMFs. And the EMF levels at ground level were well within our current safety guidelines, so nothing should happen. And they did it actually in two locations, one with a somewhat higher level exposure, one with a somewhat lower level exposure. The higher level exposure, what you found is there was an immediate drop in reproduction in the first litter. So a litter in mice takes 30 days. It's real quick. And then you can get another litter in another 30 days. The first litter was down. The second litter was down. There was no third litter. Think about that. Complete sterility. And that apparently was irreversible because you take away the exposures and they don't pop back to normal. They don't, you know, you may get a very, very slight number of births, but that's about it. So, you know, it's quite stunning. Same pattern, basically, at the lower level exposure, except it took almost twice as long. So they produced four litters with lower than normal numbers and then complete sterility again.
Does that translate to human reproductive harmful effects?
Well, that's the question. Up until recently, I would have said, well, I'm not sure that there is any evidence for this, but now I think there is. What I'd predict from the animal studies is that we will get a crash in reproduction to zero in humans, but that it'll take longer, both because things go slower in humans, but also because we do have more variation in our exposures. So in the animals, they looked at pretty much uniform exposures at two different locations. So they got pretty uniform responses. Here in humans, we have a lot more variation. We have reason to think that it's impacting reproduction for the reasons we talked about already. But then the question is, well, okay, are we seeing any evidence for such a crash in reproduction? And I think we are now starting to see that. What's true is East Asian countries, I think these are all three densely populated, high-technology countries, and they all started out with among the lowest reproductive rates in the entire world, is below 60% of replacement levels. And between 2016 and 2017, they showed a very large drop in reproduction. So those countries are Singapore, which showed a 31% drop in reproduction in 1 year. Macau, which isn't really a separate country but has separate statistics, as if it were, had a 26% drop in reproduction between 2016 and 2017. And the third is South Korea, which had an 11% drop in reproduction. The data for the first 6 months in 2018 are available for South Korea, and they had another approximately 9% drop. I think these three countries are seeing crashes in reproduction. You can't explain them in the usual ways. Usually, when you see a big drop in reproduction in 1 year, it's because you have a war, you have a famine, you have a huge economic crash. None of those things are happening in those countries. And so this is very puzzling and very disturbing. Now, I can't tell you for certain that I know that what we're seeing is an EMF effect, but that's the obvious interpretation. You know, we are taking risks of the sorts that no rational society can possibly take. And we're doing that already based on the exposures we already have. What happens when we look at 5G or even a major expansion of 4G or increases in radar exposures, which are happening from, you know, cars that are, you know, basically parking or self-driving, et cetera, et cetera. So those are all major concerns, and there are lots of other concerns as well. And right now we're acting in an incredibly stupid, self-destructive way.
Dr. Paul, you've given a PowerPoint presentation to the FCC in 2016 educating the agency about the dangers of 5G, including the stronger absorption rates of very high frequencies and how human harm would be impossible to avoid, plus the complexity of microwave pulsations. Why was this an important presentation to get on record?
Well, I was in Washington, D.C., helping to try to educate the Congress. I'm not sure that was terribly effective, but it was. And working with a couple of people to try to do that, we were able to set up an appointment for me to give a PowerPoint presentation at the FCC. And so I decided, yeah, that's a very important thing. I need to do it. The FCC has been not just ignoring all of these effects, but, you know, actively pushing these technologies. There was a 6-chapter document that was produced from the Harvard Safra Institute for Ethics, which strongly argued that the FCC was what they called a captured agency, that is, it had been captured by the industry that it purports to regulate. You know, and all the evidence that we have about the FCC is consistent with that. And so I thought, well, I should present this. Let me just say, in your introduction for this, to the FCC thing, you raised another point that I think is a very important one that we need to discuss with your listeners. And that is the following. There is a huge literature which shows that pulsed EMFs, EMFs that pulse up and down rapidly, are, in most cases, much more biologically active than our non-pulsed EMFs, that is, EMFs that are just constant in their intensity. And one of the reasons why that's important is because all of these wireless communication devices communicate via pulsations. And so that means they're potentially, and I believe actually, much more dangerous. Let me just say, our safety guidelines are based on the notion that all we have to do is look at average intensities. And yet we know from these studies on pulsation that average intensities tell you almost nothing, because you look at different EMFs of the same average intensity, and one of them pulsing a lot and the other one's not, and you get very different effects. So it's not the case that average intensities tell you anything, but the basis of our safety guidelines are entirely based on the assumption that the average intensity is the only thing that's important, and we know that's false. So there's all kinds of falsehoods involved here, and the entire regulatory structure is bogus because of that. And that's terribly, terribly important. This is, you know, we really don't have any regulation that has any science behind it at all. In general, the smarter the devices are, the more they pulse, and so the more dangerous they are. That's true whether you're talking about, you know, smartphones or smart meters or anything else that's smart. Yeah, they're really dumb.
In your 90-page report, I highly recommend listeners to get a hold of. I'll put a link on in othernewsradio.com. You include something really interesting that I didn't know about regarding the Section 322 of the Communications Act. It reads, "No state or local government or instrumentality thereof may regulate the placement, construction of personal wireless service facilities on the basis of environmental effects of radio frequency emissions to the extent that such facilities comply with the Commission's regulations concerning such emission." This is the type of lawmaking that corporations really appreciate.
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, that was done in the Congress. And I think the 1996 Telecommunications Act is one of the most corrupt pieces of legislation that's ever been passed. And that's part of the reason why.
It's a difficult process to cut through the addiction of smartphone use and warn people about the risk of cancer from holding smartphones to their ears. What have you concluded about the cancer risks of cell phone use based on your research?
All the EMFs produce similar effects. So, you know, it's the problem with cell phone use, of course, is that the way people use them, you've got them right near your ear and you're getting a lot of, you know, you're getting a lot of radiation from them. And you're also using something, particularly with smartphones, that are highly pulsed. There is some reason to think that the 4G smartphones are probably much more dangerous than the 3G ones, which were already quite dangerous. You know, one of the problems here is that you know, all cell phones are not the same, and you can't just assume they are. So the question about cancer, I think, is the following. The best evidence that cell phones cause cancer are basically they tend to cause certain types of cancer, and they've been reported over and over again, particularly gliomas and especially the most aggressive gliomas, which are glioblastomas, and in addition to that, neuromas, which are also called schwannomas, and they occur in the ear. And there are several types that we know about. In general, the parts of, you know, when you look, for instance, at the gliomas that have gone up the most are ones that occur in part of the brain that's most exposed. And those are the areas that show the biggest increases. The other thing which is important is that you get much higher levels of these tumors on what's called the ipsilateral side of the head, that is the side of the head where you use your cell phone, as opposed to the contralateral side, the other side. There are effects that relate to, you know, to the actual intensity of the exposures. And so it's hard to see any other explanation for that pattern where the ipsilateral effects are much higher than the contralateral effects, other than the obvious one, namely that cell phones, probably also cordless phones, cause cancer. You know, the industry makes all kinds of arguments, and they pick out a little bit of stuff that, you know, argues for that. But when you look at the evidence as a whole is very clear. And let me just say, the other thing which is important about this is we have the DNA effects. And we know there are DNA effects that are occurring, and we know those DNA effects have important roles in causing cancer. So what the industry likes to do is separate things out and just look at one thing, you know, cherry pick one or two studies that sort of argue for what they want to argue for, and ignore everything else. And, of course, that's not science.
You cite a letter sent to many offices by Dr. George Carlo before he retired as head of the research arm of the telecommunications industry. He was a lawyer and had a Ph.D. In the letter, it discusses the types of evidence arguing that cell phones do apparently cause cancer, and they do cause DNA damage to our cellular DNA. The DNA damage suggested that the apparent cancer causation was real. He was concerned with consumer backlash. This can be considered whistleblower action. Would you talk more about that letter, and were there repercussions or fallout?
Well, tragically, there was very little repercussions. we have an industry that has incredibly effective propaganda they put out. They've been able to corrupt to a great extent, the news media on all this stuff. So the news media don't cover anything that's important, or almost nothing that's important. In fact, there weren't any effects. But you know, the importance of the Carlo letter, I think, was that he sent these to the CEOs of all the major telecom companies. And so, you know, once that letter was sent out, and that was in, I'm trying to remember, was it 1999 or 2000? It was one or the other. You know, once that letter was sent out, they can no longer make a credible claim they don't know anything about this stuff.
Same with your PowerPoint presentation to the FCC. They can't claim to not know about this now.
Right.
Can you talk about that interview with Dr. Joseph Mercola and Dr. Dietrich Hart that referenced Russian President Vladimir Putin's quote from a lecture to the Russian Assembly regarding why Russia doesn't need to go to war with America?
Yeah, you know, one of the things I've been trying to find is to see if there are any important national or international political leaders that have any kind of understanding of this, of the EMF problem. And the only example that I could find was Vladimir Putin. And it came basically from that interview with Dr. Klinkhardt, in which he stated that he had this quote, which, of course, it was originally in Russian, but I guess it had been translated into English by one of Klinkhardt's colleagues who's from Russia. And what it said was that Russia didn't need to go to war with the U.S. because the way we're using, he said electricity, but basically, you know, exposure to EMS was the implication, was going to lead us all to be in a mental hospital. So in other words, all those neuropsychiatric effects would destroy us. And so when I saw that quote and I asked myself, well, is this credible? Does Putin really understand this? And I think the answer is yes, and I say that for two different reasons. One is that Vladimir Putin was the head of the KGB. During the last years of the Soviet Union, when the largest occupational exposure studies on EMF effects were being completed, there were over 35,000 people who were occupationally exposed that were studied in 60 different studies, most of which were done in the Soviet Union, not all of them. You know, so they had a lot of data on this stuff. And it became clear that you get effects at levels that are less than 1/1000th of our safety guidelines, and that over time they become cumulative and they become irreversible, and they include the brain effects. You know, this was chilling. And so that's number one. Number two is that I found a news article which suggested that Putin rarely, if ever, uses a smartphone. So he apparently tries to practice what he preaches. I wish I could tell you that there are lots of other people out there in politics that understand this stuff, but I haven't found any at all. It's terribly, terribly disturbing. Russia does have much more stringent safety guidelines than we do and than most other countries in the world do. It appears to be the case that they practice what they preach.
Yes, I read that they don't allow pregnant women to carry cell phones.
Okay, I didn't know that, but that's, yeah, mm-hmm. That's certainly a good idea. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coming back to the U.S. for a minute, Elon Musk announced the plan to launch 12,000 low-orbit satellites to, quote, beam an ultra-fast, lag-free internet connection to every square inch of the Earth. The satellites will contain phased array antennas and operate in the millimeter wave spectrum. With every square inch of the Earth exposed to 5G, all living things will be under involuntary exposure. I'm not sure this is really an easy concept to grasp. Can you please give listeners some idea of what this level of subjection could entail?
Okay. And let me just say there is a document that's been signed by, I'm trying to remember, something like 28,000 people around the world protesting this whole notion of 5G in space that Musk is pushing. You know, in order to understand this, I think you really have to understand a lot about 5G. So maybe we can talk about 5G so that your listeners will have some understanding of what the concerns are, okay? 5G, the whole concept of 5G is to use these millimeter wave higher frequencies. These are much higher frequencies than the microwave frequencies that we're already commonly exposed to. And the idea is that they want to use these because they can pulse much more than microwaves can, and therefore carry much, much more information per unit time. Okay, so in other words, you can just carry huge amounts of information with this stuff. There are several problems with this concept. And one of them is that it turns out that when you go to these millimeter waves, they are much more absorbed by materials than are microwaves, which tend to go through things pretty quickly, pretty easily. And for that reason, it will be necessary to use much, much more in the way of antennae. We're talking about tens of millions of these antennae, as opposed to, you know, the microwave stuff where we've got, I forget, something like 350,000, which is still huge. But
mm-hmm. Dr. Paul, is that tens of millions worldwide?
Yes, but it's not just, you know, the numbers are actually uncertain at this point. So, you know, this is kind of a, part of the problem with 5G is that it's a concept. It's not really a well-defined set of devices. So we don't really know for sure what we're going to end up with this stuff, and different companies may do it very differently. So there are lots and lots of questions about it, but in general, the idea that you've got lots of what they call small cell antennas, which doesn't mean they're low intensity things at all. These are going to use a lot of energy so that you've got enough stuff that can actually penetrate into our houses and be picked up and, you know, by our devices. That's the whole idea of this thing. And what that means is that we are going to be exposed to extremely high levels of this, particularly when we're outside and we don't have any protection at all. So that's the first thing. And, of course, you know, when you're talking about putting this into space, it means that every single organism on Earth will be exposed to this stuff. Okay, so that's the first thing. So, because these are highly absorbed, and the absorption generally involves the interaction with electrically charged groups, and because the way in which the VGCCs are activated is through the interaction with electrically charged groups, we have reason to think that the 5G EMFs will be particularly active for that reason, you know, because they're going to interact with these charged groups very heavily. The second thing is that they're going to be very highly pulsed, and as I say, that's highly problematic as well. You know, so all the prediction is that this is going to be really, really horrendous for both of those reasons. The plan is to put out tens of millions of these antennae without doing one single biological safety test. That's the plan that's been approved by the Congress, by the FCC, by agencies in a number of other countries, and it's totally insane, in my judgment. It's crazy. We need to go into something else here that's important for people to understand. One of the things the industry has claimed is that 5G will be absorbed largely in the outer millimeter or two of our bodies, and therefore it won't affect us very deeply. Okay, that's what they're claiming. That statement is both true and untrue, and I'll explain why I say that. EMFs are made up of both electrical parts and magnetic parts. And what's been known for decades is that the electrical parts tend to be absorbed relatively easily. It's probably true that the electrical parts of the 5G EMFs will not penetrate very far. But the magnetic parts are very highly penetrating. And what's been shown in the case of microwaves, so the industry claims this will only go in about a millimeter, and they've been claiming that the microwaves only go in about a centimeter, and we know that the microwave claims are wrong. And the most dramatic studies that show they're wrong were the studies that were published by Professor Hessig and his colleagues in Switzerland, who showed that pregnant cattle grazing near a cell phone tower in Switzerland produced high numbers of calves with cataracts, newborn calves with cataracts. So what that means is that the microwave radiation from cell phone tower is very highly penetrating, which the industry claims it can't possibly be. And so you have to raise two questions. One is, okay, how do the magnetic fields work? And I think the way they work is the following, that the magnetic fields you know, they're highly penetrating. When they penetrate into the body, what do? They put forces on electric, on charged groups, on ions that are dissolved in the water in our bodies. And when they do that, they move them. And when they do that, they regenerate the electrical parts of the EMFs. Same frequency, same pulsation pattern, just much lower intensity. But what turns out to be the case, and this is something we haven't talked about, it's also very important, is that the structure that's involved in the activation of the VGCCs, it's a structure called the voltage sensor, has extremely strong forces put on it by these electrical parts of the EMFs. The forces on the voltage sensor has 20 charges, not one. The charges occur in the fatty part of the plasma membrane, okay? And because of that, the forces on those charges are about 120 times higher because of what's called Coulomb's law, because of the effect of the what's called the dielectric constant. And they're about 3,000 times higher because of the high electrical resistance of the plasma membrane, which means that the forces are highly amplified right across the plasma membrane. So for that reason, you multiply 20 times 120 times 3,000, you get 7.2 million. The forces on the voltage sensor are approximately, and this is approximation, these are not precise numbers, approximately 7.2 million times stronger than the forces on singly electrically charged groups in the water, in the aqueous parts of our bodies. So that means that you got really extraordinarily strong forces on these, and you don't need very much. You know, you only need an extraordinarily weak EMF to do this. So I think that what's going to happen with 5G is pretty much the same thing that happens with these microwave frequencies, and that is you'll regenerate the electrical parts, and then you're going to get effects deeply within the body, and that the industry claims that you won't get effects are wrong. Now, let me just say, if you have a doubt about this, what should we be doing? What we should be doing is biological safety testing. And that's exactly what we're not doing, because the FCC and the Congress and other bodies have said, hey, we don't need to do this stuff. Now, this is insanity beyond belief. This is totally insane.
It is very insane. I agree with you, because it seems that they're avoiding doing this testing because the market will fall apart when there's a consensus about the harmful effects of EMF. And so when the curtain is pulled back, people would realize the harm that would occur. So instead of doing that, it almost seems like an extermination plan to me.
Well, I think that's what will happen. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think that's exactly what will happen. I think it'll happen very quickly. You know, we can become extinct in something like 5 to 7 years based on impacts on our brain function and reproductive function. What happens when you increase that rate by a factor of 10 or 100? You know, it'll be almost instantaneous. Let me just say one other thing about this. You know, the HESIC studies in Switzerland were done. Switzerland has safety guidelines that are 100 times more stringent than ours. So the cell phone tower that, you know, these cattle were exposed to were, by our standards, very low intensities. And they still have worked very deeply in these cattle to affect the fetus. You know, there are so many things that argue that what we're doing is just absolutely and totally insane. It's just beyond belief that we could even think about doing these things.
Now, you wrote a paper titled How to Approach the Challenge of Minimizing Non-Thermal Health Effects of Microwave Radiation from Electrical Devices.
Mm-hmm.
What advice would you suggest to listeners, such as turning off wireless or using Ethernet cables, at least to minimize the 4G at this moment?
Yeah. Let me just say, that paper was aimed at the industry. It wasn't really aimed at individuals. It was aimed at what the industry should be doing. you perhaps won't be surprised to hear this, but they didn't really do anything in response. It's kind of interesting, actually, what our situation is. But I thought, well, I've got to try to communicate with them, and that was my attempt to do so. Let me just say, I access the internet every day. Practically, it's essential for my work. Everything in my house is wired. I don't have any Wi-Fi. I have no wireless, even my mouse and my keyboard and my printers are all wired. There's also concern about the EMFs coming off the screen. And so I've been using a plastic shield, which probably doesn't work as well as I thought it would, but it's still useful, over the screen. You know, that's that. I do not have a cell phone. I do not have a cordless phone. I'm speaking now on an old-fashioned corded phone. I mean, the problem I have is when I travel, because as it turns out, you know, the EMFs in my house are really pretty low. I don't get a lot of EMFs from cell phone towers, fortunately. Far enough away from my neighbors, I don't get a lot of Wi-Fi from them. You can use shielding for lowering exposures. One type of shielding that I think is useful and relatively inexpensive is graphite paint, which is black, but you can always cover it with another color of paint, and it tends to absorb a lot of the EMFs. So you can use that. Using shielding in windows is more difficult, but there are ways of doing that. One thing is to use, there's some cloth, including something called Swiss Shield cloth, that can be used as a curtain. It's kind of like a lace. It doesn't let a lot of light through, but it tends to cut off the EMFs.
Thank you for your research and your 90-page report and the work that you're doing to sound the alarm to these critical dangers that are facing each and every one of us. This is the future of human beings we're speaking about, and a reckless, unbridled insanity from the telecom companies, the agencies that allow this to happen. Thank you so much for this work. If listeners want to reach out to you, how would they do that?
Yeah, you can find the 90-page document. You can search under my name, and let me say, don't use Google to search, okay? Use another search engine. Use my name, Martin Paul, P-A-L-L. You can use electromagnetic. You can put 5G. You can put in the date, May 17th, 2018. Yeah. So that's where we are.
Dr. Paul, thank you so much for being on Another News.
You're welcome.
That's going to do it for In Other News. I'm Jeff Brady. Visit inothernewsradio.com for archives and more information about the guests.